बिहारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी। जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिवर धारी। यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यशोरनंदन व्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावनचारी। यमुना तीरावनचारी जय राधामाधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधामाधव कुंज बिहारी। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2, entitled The Lord in the Heart, Text 16. Manasvabhudya malaya niyamya Chetragya etam niyayetam atmani Atmanam atman yavarudya dhiro Labdo pashantir viramet kriyat Manasvabhudya malaya niyamya Chetragya etam niyayetam atmani Atmanam atman yavarudya dhiro Labdo pashantir viramitya kritya Manasvabhudya malaya niyamya Chetragya itam niyadyattam atmani Atmanam atman yavarudya dhiro Labdo pashantir viramete kritya
Atmanam atmanam avarudya dhiro
Manaha, the mind, svabudhya, by his own intelligence, amalaya, unalloyed, niyamya, by regulating, chetragye, unto the living entity, etam, all of them, ninayet, merge, tam, that, atmani, the self, atmanam, the self, atmani, in the super self, avarudya, being locked up, diraha, the fully satisfied, labdha upashanti, one who has attained full bliss. Dhiramita ceases from. Krityat, all other activities. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Thereafter, the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super self. And by doing this, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction, so that he ceases from all other activities. Purport. The functions of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. When the mind is materialistic or absorbed in material contact, it acts for material advancement of knowledge, destructively ending in discovery of nuclear weapons. But when the mind acts under spiritual urge, it acts wonderfully for going back home, back to Godhead, for life in complete bliss and eternity. Therefore, the mind has to be manipulated by good and unalloyed intelligence. Perfect intelligence is to render service unto the Lord. one should be intelligent enough to understand that the living being is, in all circumstances, a servant of the circumstances. Every living being is serving the dictates of desire, anger, lust, illusion, insanity, and enviousness, all materially affected. But even while executing such dictations of different temperaments, he is perpetually unhappy. When one actually feels this and turns his intelligence to inquiring about it from the right sources, he gets information of the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Instead of serving materially for the above-mentioned different humors of the body, the living entity's intelligence then becomes freed from the unhappy illusion of materialistic temperament. And thus, by unalloyed intelligence, the mind is brought into the service of the Lord. The Lord and His service are identical, being on the absolute plane. Therefore, the unalloyed intelligence and the mind are merged into the Lord, and thus the living entity does not remain a seer himself, but becomes seen by the Lord transcendentally. When the living entity is directly seen by the Lord dictates to him to act according to his desire. And when the living entity follows him perfectly, the living entity ceases to discharge any other duty for his illusory satisfaction. In his pure, unalloyed state, the living being attains the stage of full bliss, labdho pashanti, and ceases all material hankerings. Om Agyam Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagra Jatam Sahagana Vaganatam Ditam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishatam Ditam Scha He Krishna Karana Sindo Dino Bandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanjana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we beg for the blessings of the assembled devotees. May our words be aligned with Guru Parampara. May the hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam together bring pleasure to Shishi Radhe Shyam, Shishi Gaur Nitai, Shri Krishna Balaram. May all the devotees be benefited by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam together. Hare Krishna. So again, this is Canto 2, Chapter 2, entitled The Lord in the Heart, Text 16. Thereafter, the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super self. And by doing this, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction, so that he ceases from all other activities. This chapter is called The Lord in the Heart. Parikshit earlier, he asked, what is the duty of a person who's about to die? And Sukadeva Goswami In response, he first says, Lokahitam, that your question will benefit the whole world. This question will benefit the whole world. And he says, Shrota Vyadishu Ya Paraha. And it is the supreme thing to hear, the answer. So one question Rikshit asks, it's like the foundation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Everything is built up from that question. And it's beneficial for everyone. And in the last chapter, he directly gives an answer. He says, Nirnitam, the decided truth is, the conclusive truth is, Harinam Anukirtanam, that one should chant and glorify the Lord through the chanting of His name. That verse is identified by the Acharyas as the answer to that question in one verse, but obviously it's contained throughout the entire Bhagavatam. Kirtan, the glorification of the Lord, is the process. That's what should be done by all, and especially for one who's about to die. So that's the positive side of it. There's always a positive side and then the negative. In the Bhagavad Gita, these two things are also there. Abhyas, you have your practice, and Vairagya. There's something to do and there's something to let go of and be detached from. So the thing to do is kirtan. But for it to be complete, we also have to follow the next instruction by Shukadeva Goswami. He says, Antakale, and at the very end of your life, when the end has come, Antakale, he says, Chidyant Asanga Shastrena, you should also, with the weapon of detachment, you have to cut off other attachments. You have to cut off other shelters. So that's important because the message is to chant the holy name. But if we're holding on to so many other things, if we have so many other shelters, then we can't chant the holy name taking shelter. It's not just chant, but it's chant and also let go of other things. Because we have to chant with a certain quality, that this is my shelter. But if I already have so many other shelters, then I'll already feel filled up and I can't call out with any feeling. So there's always the practice, there's always the thing to do, and there's always this other side, the so-called negative side, which is also letting go of certain things, letting go of sense gratification. When we let go of sense gratification, we'll feel a little emptiness because we're habituated to get pleasure there. And with that emptiness, now you chant the holy name. Now you take shelter. You'll feel yourself wanting to take shelter because you need something. The soul by nature is seeking pleasure and it's found in God. But if we're going so many other places, we'll never have that understanding or realization. It's like you're very hungry. And you eat a very nice, nutritious meal, and then you feel rejuvenated, right? But if you're eating candy all day long, if you're feeling, it's some pleasurable, there's pleasurable, it's sweet for the tongue, and all day long, then actually when you sit down to eat a nutritious meal, you're already filled. You can't really get the benefit. You'll eat very little. But if you resist that, and then finally you sit down, you eat a full meal, you're nourished. So it's like this in our relationship with God, because we're going so many other places for shelter. We get a little bit filled up and we feel good about it. It satisfies the ego, it satisfies the senses. And then we can't understand what it means to actually take shelter of the Lord. So we have to become decisive about where we go for shelter. This is the practice of a devotee. When I'm in need, where do I actually go? Actually, the word decisive, decision, here, a few verses previous, Shukadeva Goswami says, Chityant, you have to cut off other attachments. So decisive, decision also means to cut The word decision means to cut, and the idea is that when you make a decision, you cut off other options and just do one thing. You know, to become decisive means to also cut. To cut off other things, now I make a decision. I do this one thing. I've decided. So in Sanskrit, chidyan, to cut off other attachments. Those other shelters that we go to. I was with one man who was passing away, and family told me when I first met him that he loves the newspaper. He loves the news. And his whole life, every single morning, coffee, newspaper, coffee, newspaper. And it actually became a deep shelter for him. It's amazing how small the thing can be where we go for shelter and how it actually starts to control you. So this man was dying, and still he wanted to know the news, what was happening. You know, he would request family members to read for him the latest news. It was actually sad to see, because he's at this stage of life, lived a full life, but it was this one habit, this one place that he went to shelter again and again and again, and he wanted it up until the very end of his life. So in his room, there was like stacks of magazines and newspapers and family. He could no longer read himself anymore, and the family would come. And then, you know, even though he could no longer even be really conscious and understand, they'd still just read for him because it was a pleasure for him. And he got so habituated to take shelter of it. So up until the very end of life, you know, for some people that shelter is a pill. I'm stressed out, I'm anxious, take some pill. And then that becomes a habit. Every time a little stress, our tolerance becomes less, and then we need it more. It's a little small pill, and it controls us. Imagine that. You know, when someone becomes addicted to a drug, this one thing, it becomes, well, because it's the false shelter, it's not actually the shelter. And therefore, we get controlled by it in an unhealthy way. It could be the smallest thing that keeps us in the material world. It can be the newspaper, it can be a pill, because we just go there again and again, and it controls us. So we're meant to go for shelter, but it has to be the actual shelter. This topic is called Ashraya Tattva, the Tattva of the Ashraya, the Tattva, the truth of the true shelter. Who is the true shelter? This is Krishna. Krishna is the actual shelter. If you go there time and time again in your life, that will also become a habit, a tendency, an inclination. We have to go there in the right spirit, surrendering ourselves, taking shelter of the Lord. And He is the right shelter, and He'll fill us. This verse is nice. It's, of course, from a yogi's perspective, a certain process that the yogi follows by his relationship with the super self, the super soul. Labdo Pashanti says here, the supreme satisfaction enters the heart of that yogi. Same thing for the devotee. When we take shelter of the holy name, that satisfaction will come. So this is the problem, that we've made something else our God. God is the shelter. We made something else our God. It can be, you know, anything. Because it's not actually God, but we make it our God, we get it ruled and controlled by that. Because we're meant to be controlled by God. In the sense of His will is auspicious and supreme, and we align ourselves with that wish, that will of the Lord. And we act as instruments of the Lord's compassion and love. So voluntarily, we put ourselves under that spiritual energy and perform the will of the Lord. So the same point is there in Bhagavad Gita, in the 15th chapter. And the same words that's used also, asanga shastrena, with the weapon of detachment, one has to cut other attachments, and also purusham prapadye, and then surrender to the Supreme Person, Krishna. You know, the 15th chapter talks about the banyan tree, upside down. So the beginning verses there describe, you also have to cut the attachments to this material world, and then take shelter of purusham, Purushottama, the Supreme Person. So, Shukadeva Goswami, these are his answers to Parikshit for that question, what is the duty of a person about to die? And then Shukadeva Goswami, being a very expert guru and a very merciful guru, he gives another process for those whose vision, for those whose faith and vision can't go beyond this material world. He gives them also some process to do. He starts explaining the Virat Rupa, how this whole material creation is also a form of the Lord. So in the next section, this is his kindness, Shukadeva Goswami. He tells them the essence of what to do before you're about to die. You chant the name of the Lord. But for those who, they can't do that. They don't have the faith. There has to be something for them. Their minds are only on this world. So he gives a process by which, by focusing on different, having a certain meditation on this world, you're also gradually becoming purified. Because the world is also a form of God. It's a meditation on God. Right? He gives very interesting verses. The day and the night are like the opening of the eyes of God and the closing of his eyes. So when nighttime comes, if a person is thinking, God is closing his eyes now. And in the morning, the sun rises, God is opening his eyes. He says that when you see the mountains, you should consider this the bones of the supreme form of the Lord, this creation. The mountains are his bones. The rivers are his veins. So interesting verses. He gives a way of meditating on the creation. And it's very personal, even there, right? Even in the create, the bones, the veins. It's gradually creating a devotional orientation. That's what's happening. So he explains. So therefore, previously there were many verses about that. And now he comes to the next stage. You see, now he's working up. So this is a kind of meditation on the world. And then he says, in text 8 of this chapter, Kechit. Kechit means there are others also who won't do that, or who don't do that, meditate on the creation. Who are they? The yogis. And these yogis, let me just read this verse as he moves to a different path again. Text 8, he says, others conceive of the personality of Godhead residing within the body in the region of the heart. Right, so it says, Hirdaya Vikashe, that there are certain people who know that within the region of their own heart, God is there. Therefore, this chapter is called The Lord in the Heart, because it's focusing on that. That's why we have this verse about the yogi and what's happening in the process of yoga. A description of is given also of that, the Lord in the heart. He's also personal. A beautiful description is given of his features. So the yogi has a process that's being described here. What kind of person is interested in this kind of yoga? What do you think? Think about this. A person who wants to go through a kind of internal process. You know, we'll hear about there's an opening of certain chakras within the body. There's the raising of the life airs. And they actually perceive it happening while they're doing it. What kind of person would be interested in this kind of yoga? What do you think? Anyone? What's that? Introverted person? Yeah? That could be said. Anyone else? Think about what's happening and who would have an interest in this. It seems strange to us a little bit. Someone who wants to? Merge. Yeah, this is actually what's happening here in this verse. There's a desire to merge. There's some yogis can have two different inclinations. They can have the also inclination to merge into the Brahman, but they can also have a relationship with Super Soul. And it's also called merge sometimes, but it's different. They understand the personalism of the Super Soul. So that depends on the knowledge of the yogi. They can become personalist, or they can become impersonalists as well. But You know, what's the attraction here? This person is very attracted to concrete reality. You know, these are like physical processes of the physical body and the subtle body. It's very scientific. That's certain people are amazed by that, attracted by that. You know, it's not like having, you just put your faith in this thing and do this and hope it works out. But they actually learn a technique of raising the life airs, and they experience it happening. You know, and that's what future verses will talk about that. But they have an interest in this because it's like there's a concrete experience and reality of it. Their minds are interested in physical processes and subtle processes, sensations. There's a vividness to it. So this process is described here, and in the previous verse, I'll read this just so we come up to date with our verse today. We see the flow of the verses. The previous verse says, whenever the yogi desires to leave this planet of human beings, he should not be perplexed about the proper time or place, but should comfortably sit without being disturbed, and regulating the life air should control the senses by the mind. So this is Patanjali's yoga. Even in the verse it says sthiram sukham asanam, that you should find a nice sitting place that's comfortable. That's simple. You know, so many people are with yoga, they're very much involved and interested in the different asanas. But Patanjali in the Yoga Sutras, he doesn't give any asanas. He just says, sthiram sukham. You should find a steady place and just be satisfied there. That's all he gives. And this is relevant for devotees. The relevance is that we're also yogis, and we also have our chanting. And so, find a nice, comfortable place. It's hard, right? Our bodies, you know, we maybe don't have the culture, the background to be so comfortable in that way, but there's a science to it, that if you sit comfortable with your back straight, you can breathe better. And if you're breathing better, your mind becomes more calm. And then you can focus a little more clearly. So, not easy sometimes, but there is a science. There's something to take away for us, even though this is about another process, yogis. Okay, so you sit in a comfortable place, and then it says, jitasu, controlling the life airs. That's the next thing. You want to sit comfortably so that you can sit for a long time and then begin the next stage of controlling your life airs. And then prana nichayet. You stop the activity of the senses. This is also all from Yoga Sutra. All the details of this is in the Yoga Sutras, but here it's given a little couple of verses that give the same process. And then today's verse, so I'll read it again. So after that, you're sitting comfortably, controlling the life airs, controlling the senses, and then these are the next stages that come very quickly. Thereafter, the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super self. And by doing this, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction, so that he ceases from all other activities. So this is a particular kind of yoga. This is also sometimes called laya yoga. So the word laya, like we have pralaya, laya means dissolution. So the idea is that you're dissolving lower principles into the principle above it. So the senses get merged into the mind. The mind is higher. And the mind gets merged into the self. And the self gets merged into the super self, the super soul. So you're dissolving the lower principle into the higher principle. A yogi actually does this consciously by a process. And so if you merge the senses into the mind, this is an interesting point, it's connected to the purport. If you merge the senses into the mind, and then the mind into the self, who's doing the merging? Right? You're doing something, you're focusing on something. The senses, now I have control of my senses, I put them into the mind. Now I take the mind, I put it into the self. And then I take the self, put it into the super self. Who's doing it? Because if you're using the mind, if you're using the senses, you're not. That's not you. Not quite the soul yet either, but it's the intelligence. You know, it's the intelligence. Therefore, there's a strong emphasis in the purport, Prabhupada saying, with good and clear intelligence, the yogi merges the senses into the mind into the self. You know, I'll read a little of the purport again just to hear as how Prabhupada emphasizes this. The functions of the mind are thinking, feeling, and willing. When the mind is materialistic or absorbed in material contact, it acts for material advancement of knowledge, destructively ending in discovery of nuclear weapons. Okay. One should be intelligent enough to understand that the living being is, in all circumstances, a servant of the circumstances. Every living being is serving the dictates of desire, anger, etc. But even while executing such dictations of different temperaments, he is perpetually unhappy. When one actually feels this and turns his intelligence to inquiring about it from the right sources, he gets information of the transcendental loving service of the Lord. Yes. He goes on to speak about the unalloyed intelligence being the key. The function of the unalloyed intelligence. Just like the Bhagavad Gita gives an example, gives the analogy of the chariot. You know that picture. Just imagine this for a moment. There's a chariot, horses, reins, driver, and a passenger. This is a good example to meditate on. It gives a lot of clarity about our subtle body. And the carriage itself is like the physical body, the carriage. Then there's five horses that represent the five senses. And then what connects the horses to the driver are the reins. And the reins, that's the mind. And the driver is the intelligence. And the soul, if you look at the picture, the soul is just like a ghost. It's just asleep. It's like in another, you know that picture? The soul is just not in the picture at all. It's like asleep. So this describes our present state. The soul is dormant. But because of the power of the soul, everything else is active. The power comes through and affects all these other functions. So the mind in our present state is just attached. The mind gets attached. That's what it does. Attachment and aversion. It's attached to the material world. It's attached to material inclinations. So it's also like a done deal already. And the senses help the mind get what it wants. And the intelligence also now is working for the mind. The mind's attached and the intelligence thinks, okay, let me help you with this. Let me get what you want. Let me help you avoid what you don't want. That's how it works in material life. But when we start to hear, when the intelligence starts to hear from the pure devotee, from the guru, from the sadhu, from the shastra, it starts to wonder, maybe this is the way to live. And the intelligence has to start to make the first move to now take the mind, which is attached to matter, and place it at the lotus feet of Krishna. So the intelligence becomes the key factor. The driver, in that example of the chariot, the driver has to take control of the reins again. The driver is meant to get the instructions from the soul, but the soul is asleep. So it's just the horses are going after things, the reins are connected, the intelligence is also just very... The driver is very loosely holding those reins. And so wherever the senses take you, you go. But the driver, the intelligence, again, has to take hold by after hearing for a long period of time. Because the soul, the knowledge is there in the soul. The soul is meant to guide us. The super soul also is there, can guide us. But being disconnected from that, we at least have to find a person who is connected to the soul and super soul. And then we take instructions there. So the spiritual master takes the role of our intelligence. The spiritual master takes the role of the soul, of the super soul, for us, because we are disconnected from such things right now. Okay. So, now the yogi, I'm going to just come to a conclusion. It's nice because, you know, Prabhupada is so brilliant that the verse is very much about this process of yoga, but he gives the understanding for the devotee in the purports. So he also explains how the devotee merges into the super soul. What does that mean for a devotee? What's the understanding of that for a devotee? Is that the super soul is the will of the Lord, is guiding us. So when a devotee merges into the super soul, what it means is that he becomes one with the guidance of the super soul. He becomes one with the will of the Lord. So that's the prayer of the devotee. How can I serve you, Lord? And by that surrender, then the super soul guides and we're aligned with what the super soul is doing, what the super soul wants of us. Imagine living like that. That God from within has a desire and you are simply the instrument, happily serving at every moment. This is what it means for the devotee to merge into the super soul. That's how Prabhupada explains it. The yogi is mechanically trying to do this process. Mechanically. By focus, by willpower. He's trying to do the same process. But here's the problem, here's the mistake with the yogi. He's not addressing the state of consciousness first. He's just trying, by his will, to raise the life airs, to raise the soul to the top of the head, it's described. The soul is floating in the heart on the life airs, and the yogi brings the soul up between the eyebrows and then to the top of the hound, the crown chakra. And then there's this term, Svachandra Mitru, which means that he chooses when now he will exit. He chooses his own death. The yogi can do that. I'll die now. After the concentration, you bring the soul to the top of the head, and then you puncture the head. Through the head, the soul exits from the top of the head, the crown chakra, like that. And so the yogi's doing all this, and then it's described in Bhagavatam, very interesting. Then the yogi goes through different planes of existence in the universe. So he exits from his body with his own willpower, and then goes through different levels of experiences and planes of the universe. But here's the problem. Because the consciousness was not purified first, then he will be tempted by different things that are presented before him. The universe has many things to present us when you go to higher levels, subtle levels, the heavens, different ways of enjoyment, and the yogi sees all that. And because the heart hasn't focused on Krishna, possibly, throughout life, he's just into exploring the subtle body. So he may attain these amazing things, these amazing feats, but the heart wasn't focused on as a purification, purifying the heart, so then therefore he gets drawn in to different temptations when he sees many amazing things. And then he's still stuck in the process of birth and death, in the cycle of birth and death. So as devotees, we don't focus on all the internal processes. We focus on our state of consciousness, Krishna conscious. And by that, then these other things automatically happen. So a devotee who actually attains a very high level of consciousness, the chakras are actually opening, they're getting cleared, it's all happening, but the devotee doesn't even know and doesn't care. He's just loving Krishna. But the same process takes place. So the devotees focus on the consciousness, and then everything else follows that. The yogi focuses on these processes and not so much on the consciousness, and therefore they get great powers, but they can also misuse them because they're not purified. So there's many dangers of this other path of yoga. So we're hearing a description here. This yogi, Shukadeva Goswami, makes it personal, right? So this yogi's safe. There's no one else, there's practically no one who could even do this in the world anymore. Prabhupada says in one purport, this used to be common knowledge to do this kind of yoga. There's practically no one who can do it. But Shukadeva Goswami gives the process and he makes it devotional too, that the super soul has beautiful features. If you meditate on the super soul and you follow this process, you can also raise yourself to liberation. So we'll just stop here and open up for any comments, thoughts, questions. Okay, a little problem with the mic. Why don't you go to Prabhu? Nice to see you. Yeah.
Then you have the intelligence giving the ability to the mind to direct the senses of another living entity. And consciousness is a symbol of the soul. But are these, the intelligence, the mind, the senses, just a reflection of the desire of the soul? And are they animated by the soul, or do they have individuality of some sort?
Yeah, that's a good question. And
Shall I repeat it?
Yeah. So there is a description of when the living entity turns away from Krishna, then he attracts these different coverings. So there's a covering of intelligence. It's like if you imagine this, like a spiritual spark. It's the soul. And within that spark of the spirit, there's spiritual intelligence, there's spiritual mind, there's spiritual senses, but it's only a spark in the present state, in the heart. So, because of the desire to turn from Krishna, to be separate, then we draw to us material coverings, the senses, material mind, material intelligence, and they kind of are like outer coverings of the spiritual spark. So they are kind of like functions, they're not exactly, you know, other beings. And again, it's the soul who made the original decision. The soul who made the first decision. And then we get entangled, we start identifying with those coverings. So it feels like this is my mind, this is my intelligence, these are my senses, because of identification. You know, so it's like, you know, the soul, it draws these senses because we want to enjoy separately. And so you get a particular material mind, material senses, material intelligence. So they have to, in the language of this section, kind of merge back into the soul, dissolve back into the soul. And then the soul itself has the same thing, has senses, mind, and intelligence, but they're all in like a dormant state. It's like a seed in the heart. And when that seed is in the right place, like Goloka Vrindavan, then it grows again, and what comes out are the spiritual senses, the spiritual mind, the spiritual intelligence. It's all there in the soul. But presently there are like material correspondent functions in this world. That's my understanding. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu, and then we'll come to...
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhu. I was... so... as far as connecting to the super soul and, you know, getting away from our own mind, I was just thinking, you know, that's a kind of a tall order, but Srila Prabhupada, he's given us this service of, for many devotees, it's dressing deities, or there's, you know, Prabhupada set up book distribution, Harinam, and I know myself that, you know, there's 24 hours in a day, and if I can squeeze in like 2 minutes of giving a book to someone, you know, even if before I go out to do some shopping, if I put a book in my pocket, somewhere or other, Krishna sends somebody there, you know, and it's just like you see the super soul in action, and it's. We don't have to go sit in a solitary place. We can be out in the world. And it's a real super blessing. So,
thank you. Beautiful. Spiritual master is the manifestation of the super soul. So by just following Prabhupada has desires, and if we align ourselves with those desires, that is the connection to super soul. So again, we're not these yogis who mechanically try to do. But we understand the essence that the spiritual master is connected to super soul, therefore following the instructions we're totally connected to super soul. Yes, Mother.
Thank you for that really nice class. Sometimes we hear that
we're not this mind, you know? So it's such a relief because my mind is so crazy. I'm thinking, okay, good. But on the other hand, like you're talking about, we have to change our consciousness, yeah? And so I would assume that our consciousness is according to how our mind is absorbed in Krishna. Or is this something different? Because if we are not this mind, then what is the barometer as far as our absorption in Krishna?
Yeah. So again, with this section, technically, it's more the activity of the intelligence that understands what to do with the mind. Therefore, we have acharyas that have, you know, like Raghunath Das Goswami wrote a book, Mana Shiksha, Instructions to the Mind. Instructions to the Mind. If you're instructing the mind, you're not the mind, right? Who's instructing? So the soul is instructing, but the soul, to get there, we also have to start to use the intelligence by hearing, by taking shelter. The intelligence starts to wake up a little bit and say, wait, I'm on the wrong path. Let me do this with my mind. Let me do this with my senses. And then gradually, you know, by that absorption, as the mind can be placed on Krishna when we chant, right? Again, think about chanting. My mind is distracted. With my intelligence, I know I should try to focus on the name. If I can allow that to happen, it starts to happen, I'm actually focused, then the mind can get attached to Krishna with this practice and with this effort. So then, as this is taking place, this purification is taking place, we're awakening the soul. We're awakening the soul. We're awakening the real self. The real self. And the false self is dissolving. So just think of it as we're two beings. We're dual beings. We have a spiritual nature and we have a material nature. So one has to kind of dissolve as the other one begins to emerge and become more prominent. And you need the intelligence to start to see that this is happening and that wanting to do it. You know. Does that help clarify anything, or did I confuse everything more?
No, you haven't confused me at all. I guess so our consciousness, again, yes, I understand that intelligence is there on top and trying to get our mind to be absorbed.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is still there. Is our, the barometer of our Krishna consciousness, is that our absorption of our mind in Krishna?
Yes.
I guess that's the question.
That's the essence. That's what, even in this section, you know, it's the yogi here also. The idea is to remember the question, what is the duty of a person who's about to die? So the answer is to fix the mind on Krishna, and the best way to do that is kirtan. But there are other ways that you can gradually come to do that. One is by the meditation on the universe as the form of the Lord, the other is the meditation the yogi has on the super soul. But it's all fixing the mind on something, right? So for everyone, yoga means that, to control the senses, to fix the mind on this, either the spiritual nature, on God, but the mind has to be fixed on Krishna. And there are different processes for doing that. Yeah, that is the heart of it.
Thank you, Prabhu. It was a wonderful class to hear the analogy. You always hear that Krishna is realized in three forms. The Prabhupada gave the example of the sunshine. But even the impersonal form, when you say that Krishna's bones are the mountains. Mm. You have to think whose bones.
Yeah.
So in all three phases, you get a chance to, you know, think of Krishna because you're thinking whose bones,
yes,
and super soul in the heart, and of course Krishna himself. But I was thinking, you know, we don't understand all these things so much in details. But if you're chanting, like Prabhupada said, just listen to the holy name. Just listen. So the senses are automatically controlled because you're listening.
Yeah.
And all the changes, like you said, the chakras are opening, whatever, is all happening.
Yeah.
And if you have a really good day of chanting, if you actually sit down and chant, you know, 16 rounds,
yeah,
you notice how things go good all day long without actually making such an endeavor. So the consciousness becomes fixed, you know, your intelligence, everything seems to go to a higher state. So just imagine if you practice this every day, Prabhupada give us a chance every moment to chant, or at least take the 2 hours for the chanting. All this process, because Prabhupada said everything is in the name. The name is even greater than Krishna. I mean, say sometimes you wonder, you know, but just following this process, we have such an easy process if we just allow that. The intelligence become purified, desires, the senses, everything. And automatically Krishna does everything. He opens everything. All the decisions we made all day long, if we think of him, actually if we chant good rounds, we remember Krishna. It's just like a subtle remembrance, even if we don't think of him, like, you know, in his before then. And things go smoothly, but such a simple instruction, but something so hard to follow. Prabhupada said, simple for the simple-minded. So sometimes, even if I'm very tired and I have a taste of that experience, I want to get up and spend that 2 hours chanting, knowing that I've set my, you know, my barometer for the day. You know, and it's amazing, you know, I go out and on weekends, I sell things, mostly, you know, I always give out books. But somehow or other, without meaning to or without intentionally, I would say, you know, may God bless you, or, you know. And they said, oh, you believe in God, and so much conversation will come from that, you know. And I was just thinking, gotta chant these good rounds. And then the next thing I know, I'm talking about Krishna, you know, for so many minutes. And I thought, this is an amazing process, you know.
Thank you. Thank you. So beautiful. Yeah, thank you for... It's actually very simple. These details are there for those who maybe it gives them a little faith, they understand how things work, but actually, like you said, it's actually very simple. Chanting nicely, serving the devotees, just becoming sold out to that simple process. And everything takes place internally. We don't know what's happening, like some of these yogis and so forth, but it's all auspicious when we put Krishna first. Thank you. Anyone else? Thoughts, comments, questions? Thank you so much. Pran Govind Prabhu, any words?
Very nice. But I think maybe we can add something that what Mataji was explaining. You have depicted very dramatic diversion from Krishna's interest to our material existence, how everything took place in sequence. But one thing I think the most important is that the choice we have, like she said, that she chose to chant 2 hours, but that's you made the choice. Some other person also came to temple and get acquainted, but they're not making that choice. Otherwise this temple would be filled right now to hear. So from that angle, if we value our conscious choice, our utility of free will, because Krishna consciousness is not automatic, it is a conscious revelation, it is a conscious choice. The soul wants to come back. Soul is longing. But when association of devotee, of course the main factor is association of devotee, it impacts us in our consciousness. Then we make the choice. Association doesn't mean it automatically happens. We make the choice because Prabhupada said that, or that devotee said that, or Sripada Radhanath Maharaj said that. So it affects us. We think, we contemplate, we reflect, we want to apply it. Then we act on it. So then it's become easier. We see some devotees are serious, some devotees are like slacking. But still there is a choice. Doesn't matter how much bad impression from previous life may be there. So back to summarizing to that point, the desire, emotions, it's coming from the soul, not from the mind, not from the intelligence, not from anywhere. Only conscious being can produce that. But they filter through where we can detect where it's coming from. But if we are having discriminating power, then we can say, okay, where this is going to take me? Is this emotion, feeling, or this desire I have, is going to take me where? If I can see it, then I'll act on it. That is required. Then one becomes very serious. Otherwise, they will just be automatically routed by the mind or false ego and these things.
Thank you, Prabhu. Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Nice work.